Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, welcome back to New Books in Japanese Studies, a podcast channel of the New Books Network. I am Jeannie Lee from the University of Arizona. Today, I have the pleasure to talk to Dr. John Pitt from the University of California in Irvine. John researches and teaches about Japanese literature, media, and environmental history. The book we're talking about today, Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits, is a translation of the poetry collection by the Japanese poet Ito Hiromi. This translation was published by Nightbow Books last year. This poetry collection can be read as the poet's autobiography through a variety of plants. So that's what we'll be talking about today. Thank you for joining us, John.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here and talk with you today about this this really fascinating book.
Wonderful. So can you start by telling us a bit about yourself? What do you teach and research about? And in terms of translation works, what kind of translation works are you interested in?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm an assistant professor at the moment I'm in the East Asian Studies department at UC Irvine, as you mentioned, here in Southern California. And I teach classes on modern and contemporary Japanese literature and cinema. But pretty much everything I do is through the lens of the environmental humanities, right? So I teach undergraduate classes that really get into conceptions of nature, the way nature is thought of in Japan and written about and portrayed on screen. But I try to tie those with things like, you know, the relationship to settler colonialism in Japan. So I also teach classes on climate fiction and speculative fiction. So stuff that's a bit more futuristic, right? Those are fun classes. Students are really interested in those, partly because I get to pull in a lot of like manga and anime stuff that I don't really research all that much, but are really good for teaching. So my primary research, the way I situate it, is at the intersection of Japanese studies and critical plant studies. And so critical plant studies is a really important part of my project. For listeners that are maybe not familiar with critical plant studies, it's depending on who you ask, it's a kind of burgeoning field. It's something that people are really turning to more and more in the humanities, within the environmental humanities, to think about plants in more, to take plants seriously, sort of in a way that grows out of animal studies, but has some interesting differences too. But in any case, so I teach classes where we read works of literature and watch films that have interesting things to say about plant life, right? And I like to pair those with primary texts, essays and books from within critical plant studies, or what we call the plant humanities. These are kind of theoretical texts that, again, take plants very seriously as historical actors, as well as objects of, more broad philosophical contemplation. So that's kind of my research and my teaching. As far as translation goes, it's really tied to my research and teaching interests as well. So I'm primarily interested in translating Japanese texts about plant life, right? And so there are some really amazing writers in Japan, and these are both literary writers as well as more, philosophical, like. The people I'm interested in, those their works, if translated into English, could really contribute to the further development of the plant humanities internationally, right? So that's kind of where my investment in translation is at the moment, is thinking about how do we bring Japan more fully into this kind of international interest in plants within the humanities, right? There's a lot of potential there. And so that was really my inspiration for translating Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits, which is the book we'll be talking about today. You know, this is a work that I came upon when I was initially doing dissertation research and then research for my book project. And it was the kind of thing where I was translating quite a bit of it just for my own use, and at a certain point thought, you know, this is really such a rich text. I want to do a full translation. And I was reading so much work within critical plant studies, and I thought, you know, this book really deserves to be in conversation with works that are being discussed, you know, works like Robin Wall Kimmerer's Braiding Sweetgrass, for example, or Hope Jahren's Lab Girl, you know, these very popular works within academia, but also in, you know, kind of a general readership as well. Those are the kind of texts I'm interested in, is works like Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits, that I think have a lot of interesting things to say philosophically, academically about plant life, but also sort of work on their own, right? And are just good books to read for folks who are not as invested in the plant humanities side of things.
Fascinating. And from your work, I kind of guessed you're a big fan of plants yourself, because you have a book coming out that's about plants, and you also have a podcast about plants. Can you tell us a bit about those projects?
Sure. So the book, this will be my first full-length academic book. It's under contract at the moment with Cornell University Press. So Cornell has this really exciting, relatively new book series called Environments of East Asia. It's a fully open access series. So, you know, anybody listening today can head to that website and download a couple of those books already that are out on that series. So I'm really excited to be working with them. So when the book is published, eventually it'll be completely open access to anybody in the world, which is again, very exciting for me. So the book is, yes, very much about plants. It's the product of, you know, years of research at this point, builds off the dissertation, and it's looking at a trope in modern and contemporary Japanese literature and cinema that I call becoming botanical, right? So it's this trope of these writers and filmmakers that try to think about what it would be like for humans to be more like plants, right? That's kind of the central premise. And the reasons they're doing this are in response to different moments of crisis in Japanese history. So each chapter sort of looks at a different moment in Japan's modern history and kind of keys in on figures that are responding to these turbulent times by thinking, well, how do we weather these historical traumas and these storms by being more plant-like? And so one of the chapters in this forthcoming book is on Ito Hiromi. And so that's kind of how I started translating this book, as I mentioned. So the book tentatively is titled Botanical Imagination, Rethinking Plants in Modern Japan, and hopefully that'll come out later this year, if not, you know, then early next year. As far as the podcast goes, I have done a podcast. It's unfortunately had to sort of take a back seat a little bit over the past few years. The podcast really started as a pandemic project in some ways. You know, I was an early career faculty person at that point here at UC Irvine when the world shut down. And, you know, those early years are so critical as an academic to network and meet folks and exchange ideas. And not a lot of that was possible during the real height of the pandemic. And so I thought podcasting would be a good way to, yeah, reach out to folks and talk to them. And so the first season, as I called it, of that podcast was actually about ocean and ocean studies. But I'm hoping to pick it up again maybe next year, sometime soon and do a full season on plant stuff as well. So folks, if they're interested, can look that up. The name of the podcast is Nature and then a colon and then the word mono, M-O-N-O, which is a little bit of a pun that doesn't translate maybe as well as I hoped it did, right? So it's an audio medium. So mono and mono, mono being thing in Japanese. It's a little bit of a clunky title, but I kind of like it for that reason. But folks can find that online, Nature Mono, M-O-N-O, .com. You can check it out there, and yeah, hopefully there'll be some new episodes in the coming future.
Exciting! That's a lot to look forward to. Now let's talk about this book. So I want to begin with the author, obviously. So who is Hiromi Ito or Ito Hiromi?
Yeah, and we'll just start by saying Hiromi herself, Ito herself, personally, like to me directly, said that when she's being discussed in English, she prefers to have her given name first, right? So Hiromi Ito versus Ito Hiromi. But, you know, this is something very interesting that actually gets talked about in the book itself, right? Is am I Ito Hiromi or am I Hiromi Ito, right? As I'm talking about her today in English, I will refer to her by the, you know, given name first, Hiromi Ito. So Hiromi Ito, I mean, she's first and foremost is a poet, right? And certainly one of the most important and influential poets of the past several decades in Japan. So Ito rose to prominence as a poet really in the late 70s, and she's won numerous literary awards over the years for her works. Internationally, she's probably best known for her poem Killing Kanoko, which there is a really beautiful translation by Jeffrey Engels, and Jeffrey is Ito's main translator, primary translator, and that's in a volume of the same name, Killing Kanoko. And I think that poem really epitomizes Ito's sort of early work, and if anybody is familiar with it, you'll know, right? There's this frankness and this honesty in that poem and in a lot of Ito's early work that really borders on like a sense of violence. And there's a really fierce feminist ethos to it, although Ito has a bit of a complicated relationship to the term feminism. But nevertheless, right, her poetry in the 80s and the 90s really explored sex, and all of that thematic content that was really transgressive and really bloody and, you know, experimental, that all paired really, really well with her dynamic performance style. And so anybody who's seen Ito read her poetry, I mean, it's really striking. And this is a style of performance that has earned her the reputation as a shamaness of poetry, right? You might see that term being thrown around when discussing her. And so what's interesting about Ito's life and her career, and this relates to the book, Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits, is that in the 1990s, she relocated to the United States, moving to Southern California, not too far from where, you know, I'm living and teaching now. And so as somebody who lives and teaches in Southern California, I really find the work that she produced after relocating to the U.S. really fascinating, right? So on the one hand, she starts writing more fictional pieces, things that resemble short stories, novellas. And so you have works like Houseplant and La Niña, and both of these were nominated for the Akutagawa Prize. Neither won, but Ito has been on record saying she's really glad that it didn't win because it sort of set her free to continue doing whatever she wanted. But it's also in this period after she relocates to Southern California that she really starts writing seriously about plant life. And so, you know, it's in this period in Southern California that she writes this long form narrative poem, which is translated into English as Wild Grass on the Riverbank, as well as the absolutely amazing Thorn Puller. And both of those are in translation by Jeffrey Engels, in English translation, which is why I bring both of them up today. But it's also in this period that she writes Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits, right? And so Ito eventually moved back to Japan right around the 2016 election. She continues to write. You know, she's still very active as a writer and is producing everything from poetry to advice columns. And then, you know, these hybrid works that I think are much more difficult to categorize and, you know, think of within a clear definition of genre. So that's a very, very brief sort of biographical sketch of Hiromi Ito.
Speaking of genre, I think this is a reader might notice this when they open the book. Tree spirits, grass spirits. It's technically a collection of poetry, but the style is very prose-like. You talk about this in the introduction as well, but could you say more about this and your thoughts, I guess, on literary genres, in particularly in contemporary literature? In this case, regarding poetry, prose, and essays.
Yeah, I mean, genre, the question of genre is such a tricky one for, I mean, in general, in some ways, but especially for a writer like Ito, right? And I've had conversations with her about how she thinks of her own work and how she categorizes her own work. And she said that as she's gotten older, she started seeing, you know, all these various types of writing that she's done over the years as really of the same cloth, right? That this is something maybe she wasn't aware of at the time, but as she's, you know, kind of looking back at her career and reflecting on it, she really does see it all of one thing. And so, you know, for Ito, she said that she's more or less okay with readers thinking about her work, and I do mean all of her work, right? As either poetry or even as shosetsu, right? And shosetsu is a word that often gets translated into English as novel. But, you know, as many listeners might know, right, this is not a one-to-one translation, right? And so part of this gets into the autobiographical elements that you were mentioning earlier, right? Ito puts a lot of seemingly autobiographical stuff into her work. And there's this long history, right, in Japanese literature, modern Japanese literature, you know, of the I novel as a genre that is purposefully blurring the line between truth and fiction, right? So I remember when Ito's 2020 book, Michiyukiya, came out about how Ito argued very, very forcefully, you know, this is shosetsu, right? Like, really wanted people to know, like, this isn't autobiography, this is shosetsu, right? You got to understand it that way. And she's also, you know, very forcefully argued that Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits is not a collection of essays, right? Ito has a real issue with the term essay, which I find quite interesting. And this is something that she has repeatedly pushed back against over the years, even as, or maybe especially because, publishers want to market some of her books, you know, as a book of essays, right? But she doesn't see it that way. And so yes, you know, Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits doesn't really resemble poetry in the way that some of her other works, like Killing Kanoko or even Wild Grass on the Riverbank, like those formally look like poetry. You open those books up and instantly you go, okay, this is poetry, right? But the Thorn Puller, if listeners are familiar with the Thorn Puller, you know, that's another work that I think has been discussed in English translation as a novel. But, you know, that's a book where Ito includes at the end of each chapter a little footnote where she's talking about the poets that she's borrowing voices from, right? So, especially if you read the Thorn Puller in Japanese, like there's no question that it's really a book of poetry in a way, right? But it kind of reads like a novel. And so Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits does something a little bit different, but you know, I tend to think about all three of those works, right? So Wild Grass on the Riverbank, the Thorn Puller, and Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits, these are all elements of Ito's poetic practice, right? They might not, or to varying degrees, they kind of fit within our preconceived notions of what poetry is, but they're all, The way I kind of think about it is like a prism, right? You put those three together and you get this prism that her poetry sort of emerges from, if that makes sense. Not sure if it does, but that's how I tend to think of it.
Interesting. That's very interesting. And now I want to move on to talking about the autobiography element of it. Maybe this will help the genre aspect make more sense. So the pieces in this collection, they're all about plants, but each or from the different kinds of plants, each poem also reflects the life changes of the poet. So can you tell us about the significance and implication of the plants in terms of, I found this very interesting, in terms of their names in different languages?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I really love about this book. You know, as much as it's very much a book about plants, it's also as much a book about language and naming and classifying, right? And the relationship between the way we understand plant life and even ourselves and our own lives in relationship to the words that we have, the language that we have, right? The way that our relationship to the natural world is really structured by and filtered through language in some ways. So again, Ito wrote this book while she was living in Southern California, but it's written for a Japanese readership, right? And so there's a lot of discussion in the book about the differences between Japanese names of plants and English names of plants, about the differences between scientific names for plants, and by that I mean both the Japanese scientific names and the Latin scientific names, right? And then plants' common names, and again, common names can either be both Japanese or English, right? And so what I think ultimately the book demonstrates is the kind of instability of such naming, right? About how a given plant can have all these different names, and how even a scientific categorization and scientific name can change over time, right? This is something that Ito discusses and sort of tracks through different plants in this book. And so, you know, this I think really shows a certain limit to just how much we can actually know plants, right? How our understanding of them and their histories is, again, tied to language, and how, you know, language is always in flux, right? Language is always changing. And so Ito does some really interesting, I think, historical work in this book. And again, this is where the question of genre becomes so tricky, right? Because as much as it's poetic in nature, there is, you know, these kind of historical moments as well. So there's this section about succulents. And anybody who's been to Southern California, lives here, you know that succulents are just everywhere in Southern California. And so Ito finds succulents really boring, right? She writes about how she just finds them boring. But in Japanese, succulents have these really fantastical names that use kanji, right? Chinese characters. Whereas a lot of other plants, most other plants, are written in katakana, which is, you know, the one of the syllabaries of Japanese. And so that sort of difference is really interesting to Ito, right? The fact that living in Southern California, she's just surrounded by the ubiquity of succulents, and they become so commonplace. But clearly, historically, there's something about succulents that really captured the imagination of people in Japan. She speculates in the Tokugawa period, right? That they gave them these really fantastical names. And so there's a, you know, as much as there's a sort of historical unpacking going on there, there's also this poetic affect, right, to the naming of succulents in Japanese, that really stands in sharp contrast to Ito's own experience being surrounded by succulents, right? So again, you got like history and autobiography and language and poetry sort of all working together there. And then there's this other section where Ito is trying to find mentions of kudzu, right? Which again is another plant that has a very, very different connotations in the US than it does in Japan. And so Ito becomes really interested in, well, how did, you know, how does the classical Japanese poetry tradition think about kudzu, right? And so she's looking back through, you know, some of the earliest Japanese poetry to try to find mentions of kudzu. And she sort of tracks and contrasts the poetic tropes associated with kudzu in pre-modern Japanese lit with her, again, her own experience living sometimes in southern Japan, right, in Kumamoto, where kudzu just grows everywhere, right? So this is something that, again, Ito's focus on plant life, focus on language really gets her at, right? There's this kind of play happening here with the material and the semiotic in terms of plants in this book. It's about real plants, but it's also about the literary tradition. It's about poetic practice. And so I think even if a reader is not particularly interested in plants, there's a lot to gain from the book in terms of language. And indeed translation itself. And so I think for readers that are interested in the act of translation and you know, language is the way that language travels across borders, this is a really rich text in that regard.
And along that line, so in the preface, you mentioned that you consider this work also as a poetry collection about philosophy. So why is that?
Yeah, well, this kind of gets back to your earlier question about genre, I think, right? So I mentioned earlier that one of the things that really struck me about this book and inspired me to translate it was that I had this conviction, you know, that it could sit alongside these works like Hope Jahren's Lab Girl, Robin Wall Kimmerer's Braiding Sweetgrass, right? And that's because all three, and I'm including Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits here, are works that employ autobiographical elements to discuss plants in poetic ways, but they're also simultaneously making these subtle but really important philosophical points, asking really interesting questions, right? Things like, how different are humans and plants, right? I mean, that's a fundamentally philosophical question. How can we better know plant life, better respect and learn from plant life? Right. All three of these books, including Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits, asks us about science. Right. Does science conflict with other forms of knowledge production when it comes to plants? Right. In what ways do plants help us rethink gender, sex, you know, humanity sort of in the broadest strokes? So, that, you know, these are questions that come out of this book. And so I really think there's a kind of metaphysical element here. But, you know, like Braiding Sweetgrass and Lab Girl, Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits is really grounded at the same time in life experience, right? In actual plants and in places. So all three of these books that I'm talking about, you know, including Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits, I tend to think of them as works of autotheory, right? This term that became really popularized by Lauren Fournier in her book of the same title, right? And so Fournier thinks of autotheory as a kind of feminist practice that combines autobiography as well as philosophy to critical ends. And so I do think Ito has many philosophical insights in this book. You know, there are these thoughts about death and about family, about the individual versus the collective. You know, there's real meditations on spirituality and the importance of care work. And so, you know, it's by saying it's a work of philosophy, I'm not trying to say this is like a work of analytical philosophy or anything like that, but I do see it as a work of environmental philosophy. And it really does pose fascinating ontological and epistemological questions. And it does so through poetic practice and clearly through this close attention to plant life and the alterity of plant life, right? So I think readers who come to the book, and I've seen a little bit of this online, readers who come to the book expecting, you know, it to be about these beautiful descriptions of the Southern California scenery or, you know, a book that will give you a kind of insight into the Japanese mindset of about nature, right? It doesn't do that, right? Readers who are expecting that might be a little disappointed by the book. But anybody who comes to it willing to kind of follow Ito's line of thought, I think you will find a really different kind of beauty, right? And it's something that draws our attention to plant life as that which simultaneously embodies, you know, the most mundane and the most profound at the same time. And that's something that Ito is able to get at through poetic language. And it's something that is philosophical in nature, I believe.
It's interesting. When I was reading the book, reading the description and then extending to the stories behind the plants, I could resonate with a lot of it. As an immigrant myself, a multilingual person, when seeing these very different plants in Arizona, in Southern Arizona, where a lot of the plants don't even exist in Japan or in China. And trying to describe these plants to my parents who are still living in China. And I just didn't have that kind of language to explain to them how that plant, what it's called, or what do you do with it? So one of the things I was really curious about your working process in this translation is that what are some of the most important things that you wanted to convey through your version of translation? And was there anything that you found untranslatable during the process?
Yeah, it's such a good question. I will just say that, you know, there is a section of this book of Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits that does take place in Arizona. For anybody listening who is familiar with the desert and interested in cacti, for example, there's some really beautiful ruminations on cacti in this book. But yeah, in terms of translation and what I wanted to convey, I mean, I think the main thing for me is I really wanted the translation to capture as much as possible Ito's voice. Because I find in really all of her writing, but in this work as well, right? Her voice is so strong, right? It's so strong. When I read Ito in Japanese, I can really hear her there. I can hear her voice. And so I wanted to think about how do I capture the force of her voice as much as possible. And so, you know, that's of course tricky to do as you translate, but insofar as this is a book about translation, about, you know, as you're saying, sort of living between two languages, being multilingual, you know, there were ways that the content sort of helped me capture some of what, you know, was happening at the level of voice in the original. And so, you know, I tried to do things like keep the longer sentences longer and the shorter ones shorter, right? Try to mimic some of the flow of the original, the parts that I felt in the original read more like prose, to try to treat those more like prose, the stuff that felt more poetic, try to really capture that poetry in a way. I mean, a lot of that's sort of vague, and it kind of gets into, you know, just the sort of feel of it. But again, I think Ito's work is so fascinating because her command of the Japanese language is so powerful that you just inhabit her spirit, for lack of a better word, as you read her work. And so, you know, there is a little bit of like just trying to let that spirit pass through me into the translation, be possessed by it in a certain way. So as far as like what was the most difficult or things that were untranslatable, and this is something that I talk about in the translator's preface. But really, I mean, the most difficult part was dealing with all the plant names. And so what I mean by that is in Wild Grass on the Riverbank, which I've talked about a few times already, this other work of long form narrative poetry, Jeffrey Engels, who translated that one, he made a decision, you know, in conversation with Ito, that they would use primarily Latin names for the plants in that translation. And I think it works really, really well there. You know, I think it captures what the plant names are doing in that book. But, you know, as I've already been discussing, Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits is a book about plant names themselves, right? And their differences. And so I couldn't make a similar decision to kind of flatten them out and choose one method, right? To say, well, okay, I'll just use the English common names for all the plants, or I'll just use the Latin names for all the plants. Like that wasn't going to work for this book. So I really had to think on a case-by-case basis, right? Whether I wanted to use the scientific name, and if I was going to use the scientific name, whether I would use the Latin scientific name or the Japanese scientific name, or if what Ito was trying to convey in that specific moment would be better served by using the common name. And if so, would I use the English common name? Or would I stick with the Japanese common name? And if I did the Japanese common name, would I translate, would I translate the Japanese common name so that English readers could understand what the Japanese common name meant? Or just should I just transliterate it, right? Write it out in English as the Japanese word. And so I did end up using a lot of transliteration in this translation, right? Far more transliteration than I think a lot of readers of translated Japanese works are going to be used to, right? And I do recognize that some readers might struggle with that decision and with the fact that they keep encountering words and names that they're not familiar with. But, and this is something that I elaborate on in the translator's introduction, as I mentioned, that was also a very purposeful decision. And what I mean by that is I think that an English reader having to come to terms with a name like Seitaka Awadachiso, right, that they have to keep encountering that word, I think that actually brings them in an experimental way somehow closer to what Ito is dealing with and discussing in the book, right? So like as she writes about visiting a nursery in Southern California and like being unfamiliar with all the English plant names around her and, you know, having these moments where she says, if anybody ever asked me what my favorite plant here in Southern California is, I would say oxalis, but nobody ever asks me. And so I don't even know how to pronounce the word, right? So things like that, like there is something where the defamiliarization that Ito experiences with English plant names, interestingly, gets sort of flipped on its head and mirrored for an English reader who's reading the translation and suddenly has to deal with all of these Japanese plant names, right? That was a decision that I made. And I'm really grateful that Nipo Books, the publisher, they were fully on board with that decision. They're an absolutely amazing press publisher. I really recommend anybody listening to this, check out Nightboat Books online. You can't go wrong, with the works that they publish. Because I do think of this book for as mundane and sort of quotidian it seems in some ways, it's also very experimental. And so I wanted my translation to have a little bit of an experimental edge to it. And I felt like the decision to keep a lot of transliteration in the translation, right, was one of the ways that I could sort of tap into the experimental qualities of the original. So I'm really pleased with how it ended up turning out.
Yeah, and as a reader too, I thought it was very effective because he used the translation to kind of convey the multiple layers of stories that Ito was trying to tell through these plants. And speaking of these stories, first of all, there are a lot of layers, as you mentioned in the beginning, layers of stories of her autobiography that she's trying to tell through the plants. I was wondering if you can use maybe a section from the translation to kind of show us how the stories operated through the lens of the plants and how your translation carried those through.
Sure. Yeah. I guess I would point to, there's a chapter towards the end of the book. And again, I don't know if chapter is the right word, right? There's a piece towards the end of the book where Ito really dives into Sugi, right? The Japanese cedar. and thinking about how historically within the scientific classification of the sugi, the Japanese cedar, right? It belonged to the same family as the giant redwoods, the sequoia, right? And how that was something that always really spoke to Ito, and something that she felt sort of bridged these two parts of her life together, right? That there was this extended family that spanned between California and Japan, right, in this tree. But then there was this change in the way that plants were scientifically categorized, right, when the APA system was adopted, and all of a sudden the sequoia and the sugi were separated, right? And so there's this whole chapter about that, and about how she felt absolutely devastated, like it was breaking up the family, and this has all these like personal resonances with her. And so that chapter posed a little bit of a challenge too, because it was like, well, okay, do I translate it as cedar? You know, do I leave it just as sugi, which is ultimately what I decided to do? But then there are certain elements in the original chapter where Ito is making little puns with the word sugi, right? Like things where in Japanese you can add a suffix to a verb, and you know, something sugiru, right? To do something too much. And so she's kind of playing with the language in that way, and that was very hard to capture in English, so I ultimately couldn't do that. But you know, this is really a book about migration, right? And it's about Ito's experience as an immigrant in the United States, and so she's using plants to think through this, right? So the sugi example is a really interesting one, but the one that always sticks with me, and again, maybe it's because I see it every day of my life here in Southern California, is her discussion of ice plant. Right, so she talks a bit about ice plant, which is this plant, if anybody is unfamiliar with it, that was brought to California. It's a succulent, right, that was meant to sort of prevent erosion, to prevent erosion alongside the railroad tracks when the rail system was being put in California, and then also was adopted later alongside highways. We find it along all the beaches here as well. But this is commonly thought of as an invasive species, right? And so there's so much discussion in this book, as well as in Ito's other work as well, about this relationship between native species, naturalized species, and invasive species, right? And so she's thinking about those plants, those categories, alongside her own experience, you know, and the human experience of migrating, acclimatizing, adapting, changing, right? And so there's this really powerful moment, I think, in the book where Ito sees herself in this piled up corpses. She uses the word corpses of ice plant, right? She sees this pile, somebody has weeded all of the ice plant because it's an invasive species, right? And she's thinking like, you know, I'm devastated by looking at these corpses of ice plant, and she sees herself in these invasive species, right? So she's really thinking about the kind of xenophobic rhetoric that she encounters in the U.S. and Japan, to be sure, right? And so she's using those, you know, plants to think about how those anxieties, are, you know, this xenophobic rhetoric gets mapped onto the world of plants at the same time, right? And again, I think this is where Ito's work becomes very philosophical, and it gets this kind of critical purchase, right? And so we can think about it alongside other books that look at this relationship between human and plant migration and xenophobia and racism, right? So Jeannie Shinozuka's Biotic Borders is a really good example, and Banu Subramanian's Ghost Stories for Darwin, right? These are works that I like to read alongside Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits. So it's a book about migration, about travel, you know, ice plants help us get there, the sugi, the Japanese cedar, cryptomeria helps us get there, right? But there's a lot of other things going on as well, right? About travel, about cultural difference, about caring for family and how caring for plant life sort of overlaps, but also disconnects, right, with caring for human family. But, you know, in the end, I really think it's a story about wonder, as maybe unacademic as that might sound, right? There is this sense of wonder that runs throughout the book. You know, it's like real desire to not take for granted, you know, the life that grows all around us. And so it's about, you know, living within that life and the different ways that humans try to understand life itself, right? And that can be through science or literature or spirituality or some combination of those things. And for Ito in this book, plants become the point of focus where all of those things come together. So yeah, that's what I would say about that.
That's very beautifully said. Thank you. And thank you for your time and joining us on the channel today for talking about this book.
No, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much for the great questions. And yeah, it's always a pleasure to be able to talk about Ito's work. And yeah, I really hope some folks take the opportunity to read this book. And I really do recommend reading it alongside The Thorn Puller and Wild Grass. I think those three together really open up a world that is quite something.
Thank you. So for our listeners, you heard that. Make sure to give this book a read and other works by Hiromi Ito if you're interested in plants and the philosophy behind them. This was Tree Spirits, Grass Spirits by Ito Hiromi. Sorry, Hiromi Ito, translated by our guest today, John Pitt. It's currently available in paperback. I am Jingyi Lee. Stay tuned for our next episode.